Come right in, pull up a chair. It's time once again to gather around the gaming table with your friends here at The Gaming Gang. This time around, we'll review Baltimore and Ohio from Eagle Games and Thunderstone from AEG, plus Julius Caesar from Columbia Games. We'll discuss the biggest games of 2010 and all that and more on this episode of The Gaming Gang. Now here's your hosts, Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller.
Hi, I'm Jeff McAleer.
And I am Elliot Miller.
And a Happy New Year to everyone out there.
Woo, Happy New Year, woo.
And as you can hear, Elliot is once again with me. Elliot, you've been under the weather a little bit, eh?
Yes, I was sick. You'll probably hear me coughing randomly, which I'll try to avoid. But
I don't know why you'd be coughing randomly if you had hemorrhoid surgery.
I knew they screwed up something.
Well, at least you got rid of one pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, I have another one.
Well, don't let your wife hear you say that. All right, so moving right along, we've got lots to cover this time around. First, I wanted to mention one game that I just recently got a chance to play. I'm not going to go into a full-blown review of it. And also something that really doesn't necessarily fit into the entire theme of games, but I thought it was really cool, so I wanted to mention it. Reverse Charades, first off, was sent to us. I thought, okay, charades, what are we talking about here? Somebody's actually boxing and selling charades. That's like selling tic-tac-toe, you know? I was really surprised. I thought it's really fun. It's funny, I think, is probably the bigger part of it. It's reverse charade. So rather than it's one person acting out, it's actually a group acting out and one person has to guess. Like I said, it's pretty funny. It's a fairly fun game, a nice party game. Isn't going to win any huge awards or anything like that, but it's pretty decent and the price point's pretty low too. So it's definitely worth picking up. It is what it is. It's reverse charades. You know, it's truth in advertising right there. Something else I did want to mention it's from GameRight. Actually, I believe it's from one of their subsidiary companies. I can't remember the name of it offhand. Is a puzzle called The Baffler. It's actually pretty neat. It's not just the typical puzzle. It's not easy. I don't find any puzzle really all that easy anyway, like 500,000 piece puzzle. I mean, you're not going to find me sitting there going through them, but
it's like a jigsaw puzzle or?
Yeah, like a jigsaw puzzle. I definitely recommend if people want to take a peek that they go to GameRight.com, and their video for it is pretty funny too. But there's like three different designs to choose from. The one I've got is like a circular. So you're actually, kind of building it as it, winds its way to the center or from the center out. So yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool. It was different. So, Of course it doesn't fall into the category of a game per se, but I did want to mention it. If somebody's looking for a little bit of a challenge or they have, friends who are really into puzzles, it would make a nice gift.
There is something that I wanted to mention too. I got to play Scrabble Flash.
What?
Okay. Scrabble Flash or Flash Scrabble. Basically, you get these five little cubes and they have LED screens on them. I mean, these cubes are like, I don't know, an inch by an inch.
Okay.
By an inch and a half.
Okay. Yeah.
And they have these little LED screens on them. Turn it on and then you kind of put the cubes next to each other. Lays out like five letters. And then you got to come up with the words out of those letters and you score points just like in regular Scrabble.
Right.
You get a certain amount of time to do it. And, so you get points based on that. And then you give the cubes to somebody else and then they try their hand at getting the most amount of words. It was actually a lot of fun. And it's just these little teeny cubes. Not little teeny, but these small cubes. It comes with this plastic box that's like, 4 inches by an inch. If that.
Do you want to go get your ruler out and measure this place? I need to know.
Well, I'm trying to give you an idea.
I understand that. I believe it's 147 millimeters by.
I meant to have the measurements for everyone beforehand. I'm sorry that I was not prepared.
Are these battery powered, solar powered? Do they have like little watch batteries in them?
No, I believe they have dilithium crystals in each one, which is also very cool because I hadn't realized they had actually discovered dilithium at this point.
I didn't think so either. But
I don't know. They came, I haven't opened the things up. They came pre-batteryized.
So I'm sure they got little watch batteries in them.
Now, that is an official word now, right? Pre-batterized? Batteryized? Was that it?
Battery eyes, yes.
Ah, okay.
It's like Betty Davis eyes, but a little different.
Right. Thanks, Kim Carnes. Anyway, last thing I wanted to mention was, I'm sure quite a few of our listeners already knew about this. There had recently been an auction that was to benefit our good friend Tom Vassell's son, Jack, who was in the hospital and everything. From what I hear, I think there's been improvements. I'm not sure if he's home from the hospital yet. I don't know. I haven't found out. One of the games that actually I won was Gunslinger from Avalon Hill.
Yeah, Dirty Dog.
Yes. Which, gosh, that's been out of print for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, maybe more than
yeah.
that. Well, so I get it. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, it's an old Avalon Hill game. Of course, it's not going to be in the best shape. Now, of course, the counters were all punched. I get the box. The box is almost pristine. I open it up and it was like, oh my gosh. I mean, nice and clean. I was like, holy cow. You know, it's kind of funny because it brought back a lot of memories because I had the game. I'm sure you
did
remember.
You?
Yeah, I had it.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember what I had for lunch.
That's true.
But you know what? I do recall us at least playing. It's the game where it lasts like 5 seconds is the whole game, right?
Sort of.
And it's spread out. You know, you're doing this quarter second, you're doing this. This quarter second, you're doing this.
Well, it's like every 2 seconds or something like that. But I mean, it's, yeah, it's the reality of it. Once you would play an entire game, the time span's probably no more than 5 minutes. I mean, we're not talking Car Wars kind of, we played all day long and we actually drove like 300 feet. But.
Right. I hardly remember this at all. So it'd be really nice to be able to play it again.
It was just so cool to see it. I mean, just to see it, not even just bust it out and play it, because of course I haven't had a chance yet. But it was just so cool to just sit back. And then, of course, I'm thinking back to the times we played Circus Maximus and stuff like that. I was like, oh, man, you know, that's one of the things I really get a kick out of the older Avalon Hill, SPI, things like that. GDW games is not necessarily the game itself, but it's like, oh man, you know, I remember we sat there with so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and we played this. I mean, we're talking 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
I like that feeling. I really do. I don't know. Call me a goofball. What can I tell you?
You're a goofball.
All right. Well, on that note, moving right along. On the last show and the website, we asked you to give us a call on the TGG hotline, 480-779-7365, and tell us what your favorite game of 2010 was. So sprinkled throughout the show, we'll include your favorites, and we'll announce the winner of the contest that went along with the call-in at the end of the show. Needless to say, we didn't include everyone on the show, but if you left us a message, we did put your name into the hat for the contest. Here's our first caller.
Hi, this is Mark from Arizona, and my favorite game of 2010 year is probably Civilization. I like Civilization because it's just epic. You got your technology, and you have a lot of nice wars going on, and you start off from like ground zero with a little cart. It's really cool. It's not too deep. I like it a lot, and that's my favorite game.
And now it's time for the news.
What is it, Don Adams? Oh, we got Maxwell Smart.
Well, Chief.
Missed it by that much.
I insist we use the cone of silence.
A couple of games that have just been made available for purchase. Blockade Runner from Numbskull Games. The game is set during the American Civil War, and the players are actually, amazingly enough, blockade runners trying to get goods out of the South and come back with war materials. It's not a war game from what I can see. It looks like it's more of a kind of a trading game, really. I'm looking forward to taking a peek at that. I want to say the manufacturer's suggested retail price on that's going to be $39.99. Also from Compass Games comes Steel Wolves, which is going to be a follow-up to their award-winning Silent War, where Silent War, you played the Americans and you commanded submarine groups during World War II. Steel Wolves is going to take you to the Axis side. So you'll actually be the Germans.
With U-boat?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it looks really, actually looks really cool. Do you know right now Compass Games does have a special, it's not like a pre-order because it's out, but it is a special discount that you can get it for $99.
For what?
You heard me, $99. It normally retails for $130.
For $1 million.
$1 million. I thought for a second you were going to say, holy cow, man, you could buy your own submarine for that. But I've heard great things about Silent War. I have not had an opportunity to play it. I'll be the first to admit. I've heard it's really awesome. And think
Silent
of it. This,
War or Silent Death?
No, Silent War. No, Silent Death okay. is an old ice miniatures game with spaceships. Remember? We used to play that.
I knew I heard it before.
Huh?
I knew I'd heard it before.
Well, yeah, you played it. So what did you have for lunch today?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's just whatever it is. It's in my belly now.
Yay.
Hey, boo-boo.
Also in the news, the new website, Board Game Info, is out in beta test right now. But it's an open beta test, so you can actually go there, look at it, play with it, have fun. They're already signing up quite a few contributors. They've got Tom Vassell on board. They've got Shannon Appleseen on board. And they've even asked us if we'd like to participate, and we're talking about it. You know, we haven't made up our mind what we're going to do yet.
We're bouncing it around.
Yeah. But we wish them the best of luck.
Oh, most definitely. We're big proponents that we should have way more websites out there, quality websites out there that talk about the hobby.
Yeah.
Now, interesting that you mentioned boardgameinfo.com, as well as Tom and Shannon. Scott Nicholson is also going to be a contributor. I believe his title is going to be the game professor. Just Excellent. Earlier this week, we did see that Scott Nicholson, unfortunately, has decided that he's no longer going to produce his Board Games with Scott video casts, which is sad. I mean, I really always enjoyed it. I mean, he was doing it for like 5 years.
I know.
And
I 70 haven't seen
episodes.
This one yet. Yeah, well, I know he's been waffling for a while now what he wants to do. Yeah, I am going to miss him. I really enjoyed his videos.
Keep in mind, his last video, it's only about 5 minutes. And he just talks about how he's not going to be doing it anymore. He also discusses why he's kind of moving away from doing the videos, which I'm not going to talk about here. Go check out the video. But he's going to contribute to Board Game Info, as well as he'll continue his Board Games with Scott website, and he'll still be contributor and a host
on Board Games.
On Board Games, yeah. Thank you. For a second, I was like, "Is it on Board Games?"
It is.
Sorry,
very good podcast.
We're also thrilled to announce that Victory Point Games is going to be an ongoing sponsor of The Gaming Gang, and you'll hear about their latest special in just a bit. And our last bit of news actually has to do with ourselves, with The Gaming Gang.
Amazing.
No. I'm pleased to announce that we're going to have two new contributors joining the gang. Now, in January, Nate Owens will be coming on board, and he has a number of reviews both on Board Game Geek and Fortress Ameritrash. From my understanding, what Nate's going to do is he's going to cover a multitude of genres, so he'll be bringing his talents to us as well. I'm also very thrilled to announce that in early February or so, we're going to be welcoming former Fire and Movement magazine editor David Nicholas to our merry group, too. David's going to contribute mainly reviews of war games and history and opinion pieces. We're pretty excited by that. We've got a lot of big things planned for 2011. We're going to be at Origins. We'll be at Gen Con. We're going to try to get out there to more of the game days and smaller conventions as well. Just so you know, we're catching on. Our website just had, for the month of December, we had nearly 24,000 visits. So I was kind of impressed by what we've done in 4 months, and hopefully everybody's enjoying the time that they come to spend on thegaminggang.com.
Yeah, well, no kidding. What do we have the first month, like 300?
No, the first month, and I'll be very, very honest, the first month we didn't have any sort of announcement whatsoever. Right. So we went live August 1st and we just started adding content, but we weren't on search engines. We didn't talk about anything on BoardGameGeek anywhere. Our first month, we had 55 visitors for August.
Sweet.
Sweet.
Now, wait. Now, if we keep doubling, I predict that by the end of 2011, every human being on the face of the earth will have visited our site.
I highly doubt that.
I don't know. Every human being, I'm thinking.
I don't see that happening.
Wait, I'm going to get the Droid app published to enable the gaming gang on handheld systems. What do you think?
You can do it already. I check the website all the time for my Droid X. Like I said, we had 55 visitors in August. Probably equated out to maybe about 200 visits overall. I like to look at visitors as opposed to just visits, because there are people who come by, you know, 3-4 times a day. If we were to continue the growth that we're at right now, and I'll be very, very honest, I don't see us doubling our numbers every single month, but we have over the last 3 months. Come mid-September, that's when we started talking a little bit out on BoardGameGeek. We got submitted to Google. I didn't want people to come by and say, hey, those are three really nice articles you guys have. That would be just silly. So it was about mid-September that we did make the announcement on BoardGameGeek. Google started carrying us in the search engine as well. If we continue that kind of growth where we double every month, which honestly, I don't foresee that happening. But if it did, we would have 4 million visitors, not visits. Visitors come to our website in 2011. And I think that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I wish us continued success.
So do I.
Best of luck, me and you.
And you and me and James and the new guys.
Right.
And we are always looking for more contributors. Our game plan by the end of 2011 is to have maybe 9 or 10 people all contributing to the website. I think that's a nice number. Keep it pretty tight, be able to cover a variety of games that maybe we don't get a chance to tackle at this moment.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Hi, this is Ned Lessonwell from Shreveport, Louisiana. My favorite game from 2010 is Phantom Leader by Dan Bierson Games. I find that it has the right balance of playability versus simulation, and it's a solitaire war game, which I like. And Jeff, I hope you're enjoying your copy of Lair of the Rat King that you won from me in the Geek Gold auction. I can't wait for the next show.
And now it's time for the Gaming Gang's game review. Try saying that 10 times fast.
I'm not going to try.
First game I want to look at this time around is Baltimore and Ohio from Eagle Games. It's designed by Eddie Robbins. It's for 3 to 6 players. Just came out this year. In fact, fairly recently. And it's for ages 16 and up. And I'll explain why. You can usually get a game in within about 3 hours or so. Now, this is a new edition of the 2009 Winsome Games release. And first thing I want to talk about is the bad stuff right up front. It's got to be addressed. I know a lot of gamers out there, they're wowed by, you know, beautiful components, really nicely presented rules with pictures, extensive examples of play, dazzling and colorful counters, so on. Now, if you're one of those gamers, I'm going to assure you right now, you are not going to need any sunglasses to protect your peepers from the glory of the graphic design of this game. In fact, I might recommend that you turn the lights down a little bit in the room so you can barely see the game board while you're playing. What I'm saying is, this is one ugly game. I mean, seriously, there isn't another word that comes to mind. Now, I haven't seen the 2009 Winsome Games release, but I have been told that Eagle Games has done yeoman's work as far as improving on the graphic design originally. So if that's the case, then the awfulness of the original release must be stunning. I mean, it really must be. Other thing I point out too is there is a lot of math in the game. That's why it's ages 16 and up. And that's the way I look at it.
It's like calculus?
Dude, I'm telling you, you need to have a scientific calculator at the table and every player has to have one.
Oh my gosh.
Or There is an excellent computer assistant over on BoardGameGeek from Ken Booten that if you have a laptop handy, you might want to run that because it's nonstop record keeping. If you're a gamer and you don't dig math, you're going to want to include this into the equation.
So
and
this is a hardcore game, hardcore training game.
It's not. That's the thing. Even yourself, you're thinking, wow, you know, gosh, it's an Eagle game. You're going to rip another Fred distribution game. Reiner Knizia doesn't even have anything to do with this one. No, so really, that's not the case. The game is a blast. It's awesome. It's loads of fun. And that's a credit to how fun the game is, that despite the fact that it's obviously one of the least attractive games you'll ever see,
yeah,
and that you're going to be sitting there, you know, doing math constantly, not constantly, but there's loads of record keeping, probably more record keeping than any game that pops into my head.
Well, what's an example of record keeping? What do you mean by record keeping?
You have to sit there and you have to figure out your stock values. You have to figure out the profits that your company is making. You have to figure out what is the cost of maintenance for your company. All these things come into play. The game itself, it's not a difficult game to learn. It just involves a lot of record keeping. The game turn itself breaks down into three rounds. First of all, let me point out, it's of course a railroad game, but it's not like you form a company and you're always at the head of that company. That's where the stocks come into play. You can take one of the railroads and start it up, but if somebody ends up owning more stock in that railroad than you do, then they become the president of it and they get that railroad.
Okay.
So they become the person who's handling that railroad. So you can have more than one railroad that you're operating at any one time. I'm not going to say that's a drawback for people because you can get knocked out of the game, I guess we would say. I mean, if you played poorly, I mean, if you just don't, you know, you make every wrong decision out there, yeah, you're going to be out of the game. It's pretty difficult to be that dense. The game turns break down into three rounds. The first is the market round, and that's where stocks are bought and sold, as well as the value of the stock is determined. And that's when you start a new railroad if you want. As I mentioned, if you're not the guy who's got the most stock in that company, so wave goodbye. So it's very important that you handle what's going on with your company and you have more stock in that than anybody else. Second round is a business round. The way the turn order goes is whoever's got the highest stock value for the railroad goes first. Second highest goes second, so forth. You can scrap your old equipment to raise money. You can buy new equipment. You can build new track. You want to connect the cities. Now, some railroads specifically, because they are historical railroads, have to connect certain cities together. There's only two that have to do that, but you have to connect certain cities together before you can go anywhere else. If you're not running a profitable railroad, you are in trouble because your stock prices will drop. So also that means you're going later and later in the game turn. The business round is where you have all the calculations that are going on in this second round. The third round is a repeat of the business round. So there's two business rounds. That's why I'm saying that you've got all these calculations that you're doing. And then at the end of every turn, you check to make sure to see if any of the victory conditions have been met. It ends as the game progresses, new technologies become available. And of course, prices go up for things and the value of things go up as well. Once you hit technology level 6, or if any stock is valued at $375, and a lot of the stocks start off at like $60, then the game comes to the end and whoever has the most money wins. That's it. It's all about the money.
No victory points.
No.
Crazy.
It's all about the money. So like I said,
Is this one of those games where if you make a mistake at the beginning of the game, you're pretty much effed for the rest of the game? Might as well throw in the towel?
No, I can't say that. No, not from what I've seen. Now, if you continually make stupid moves, then yes.
Right. Well, that would happen with anything, really.
Right. I mean, if you're not focusing on making sure that your railroad is profitable, yeah, you're going to be screwed. But no, it's not where you make one little mistake in the beginning and all of a sudden you're playing catch up the rest of the game, which can be very frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Okay.
And this goes back and forth pretty good because there's a lot of depth. You have to plan. You can't just be sitting there every turn going, well, I'm going to react to what everybody else is doing. You're definitely not going to win. There's no luck. There's no die rolls. There's no random cards, anything like that that's going to doom a good strategy. Just like there's no bailout for a poor strategy either. And to me, that's one of the biggest things I like about the game. If you play lousy, you're going to lose. And if you play well, you can easily pave the path to victory. So it's not like somebody at the last minute rolls a die and all of a sudden, oops, hey, there went your whole game. Not at all. It's easy to learn. It's kind of funny that, and we use this term a lot when we talk about games, it's easy to learn. It's a challenge to master.
Yes. Well, that's a good thing. It's generally looked upon as a positive thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a game that you're going to go back to. The first time you play, it's going to probably take you about 4.5 hours. No kid. Like I said, it's not tough to learn, but there are a lot of things that you got to get used to. But the gameplay is really deep. But once again, I do have to point out, it is ugly. It really is.
What, the map board? I mean, does it have a map board or is it?
Yeah, the map board is, I mean, there's nothing really to it. The color scheme, it's all like green, and some of the print on it isn't the easiest to see. Just the color combinations that were used. I was joking about turning the lights down to play, because if you did, you're not going to be able to read like the city names and stuff like that. I would say if Baltimore and Ohio just had a little bit of a graphic design change, and there's a few little tweaks here and there, this easily would be in the running for best game of the year. It would. And it's kind of funny because it reminds me in a way of the friend that we've all had of the opposite sex, that we've all had this at some point in our life. They may not have been the greatest looker around, and your pals all wondered, why were you even hanging out with them? Yet your friend had so much personality and was such a blast to spend time with. You really didn't care what anybody had to say. That's what Baltimore and Ohio kind of reminds me of. I'm serious. It sounds stupid to say that, but that's what it kind of reminds me of.
That's funny. Does it have a solo version or is it impossible?
No, it's 3 to 6 players. It's not even worth your time trying to play with two.
Oh, gotcha.
You have to remember, you're not just running one railroad. You could be running 3 railroads.
My God, man.
I know, it's crazy, but you're the president. And you're not sitting there like worrying about, oh, how much do I have to pay my laborers to lay track and things. No, because presidents of companies don't worry about that kind of stuff.
Conveniently.
They worry about connecting to cities. There's certain hexes that have coal, which if your railroad connects to that, you know, that's extra money and things like that. But yeah, it all boils down to, it's all about the Benjamins, baby.
Is there moving goods from here to there money making in it at all?
Nope. It's just each city has a value, and if you're connected to it, you're getting that value.
Oh, okay. I see.
That amount. You're not sitting there moving cubes back and forth and stuff like that. No.
Okay.
Once again, that would not be something that the president of a railroad would be all that concerned with. Well, do we move cattle or do we move manure? You know,
let's do both.
Don't worry about it. Yay. In fact, you easily could.
Okay.
So great game. Definitely worth picking up. It retails at $59.99. I do know that Funnigan does have it for 20% off, as usual, for $47.99. Most definitely worth the pickup. You've just been warned. Have your calculator and wear some shades.
Hey, Jeff and Elliot. This is John from Auburn, Alabama. I recently found your podcast and been listening to several episodes and enjoy it. Thank you for the work you do and putting together. I encourage you to keep doing it, and I'll keep listening to it. Calling specifically on your comment on your last podcast about the best game of 2010, in our opinion. And a lot of games came out in 2010 that I think are really good. I haven't had a chance to play them yet. Alien Frontiers, Seven Wonders, Founding Fathers, just being a few on that list. But of what I have gotten out of 2010 and played several good ones, in my opinion, a couple sort of honorable mentions I'll try to throw out there quick. Zombie Dice from Steve Jackson. My oldest son got that in his stocking this Christmas. And I'm not even a fan of the zombie genre in general, but I'll tell you what, that game, for the small package, small cost, quick, easy to learn, fun, great value in terms of just time spent to have fun doing it. I played it with all levels of the family, from my 13-year-old son up to my mom, who's older than that. Anyways, also want to mention the Voltron board game from Privateer Press. It's interchangeable with their Monster Apocalypse system. It's a system that I really wanted to get into, but I just couldn't justify another collectible game. And when that came out this year as a standalone board game option, really excited. I did get it as a Secret Santa gift this year. I haven't had a chance to play it, though, so I have a hard time making it my favorite, so I actually do more than read through the rules and play one or two sample part charts. So what really was my top game, 2010 for me, that would be Castle Ravenloft. Castle Ravenloft from the Dungeons & Dragons game, guys, it just does a great job of doing what it says it'll do, being sort of a light introductory RPG experience. I played it with my son several times. We enjoy it. I've played it solo. We've enjoyed it. It's really good, and for me personally, it kind of hits an itch I've been looking for a while. Over two decades ago, I played a game called Sorcerer's Cave, which is out of print, and you can't get any more. But it's got some of those same elements of laying down the tiles and taking your hero character, fantasy hero characters, exploring through a dungeon. You set it tile by tile. This new game really does that and all more for me. So that's it. My favorite game from 2010, Castle Ravenloft. Thanks. Have a great new year, guys.
Well, I'm going to be talking about Thunderstone. Thunderstone came out in 2009. It was from Alderac Entertainment Group, or AEG.
As we like to call them.
Exactly. It was designed by Mike Elliott, and it's Mike Elliott with two T's. So, you know.
Just, hey, that reminds me of somebody else.
I know. I like him already. It's for 2 to 5 players, ages 12 and up. And it takes you about an hour to play a game. Your first one's going to go a little longer. Setup is a little bit more involved.
A little more involved than what?
Than zombie dice, really.
It takes me about 45 minutes to get a game of zombie dice going. I don't know why.
Thunderstone was number 2 on the gaming scene. Number 2 or 3. I can't remember. As far as deck building games go,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right
after the big one, Dominion came out, which, you know.
What's that?
I have to say, I love Dominion. Dominion is a lot of fun.
Are you reviewing Dominion or are you reviewing Thunderstone?
I am reviewing Thunderstone, but I have a few things to say. Can I finish? Can I finish?
Do you understand the words coming out of my mouth?
Dominion kind of set the whole stage deck building frenzy for everything that came out afterward. They're in a good spot because coming out after Dominion, you can cash in on some of that popularity. Also, if you publish a game that's crap, kind of dooming yourself from then, you know, there'll be a rush of people to buy it and then it'll fade away completely. I think in the case of Thunderstone, I think they managed to pull it off. It's a much more thematic game than Dominion. Because Dominion, you know, can boil down to everybody sitting, staring at their hand and just throwing cards out on the table, you know? In its purest form, there's almost no interaction between players. And you don't really get to feel like you're in the middle of creating a Dominion. That's my opinion anyway. I think they managed to pull off a more thematic experience with Thunderstone. It's a fantasy setting. It's almost like a dungeon crawl because you're going into a dungeon, you're killing some monsters.
It is a dungeon crawl.
Yeah, it is. It's a card game.
That's
dungeon
the theme.
Crawl, really. The game box, it comes with 530 cards and a rule book. You know, there's going to be a lot of comparison between Thunderstone and Dominion, or Summoner Wars and Dominion, or Joe the Card Game and Dominion, because Dominion was the first one.
I loved Joe the Card Game.
It was one of my favorites.
What? That's the best game I know of named Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Where are you going with that gun in your hand?
The cards all fit into the insert. If you're familiar with the Dominion insert and their box, everything is separated so you get each of your stacks of a particular card in separate little spots, and then it's all labeled so that you can easily pull out the different cards that you need. This one's a little different. They come with little dividers. So whereas Dominion, you got to have one box for each version of the game that you get. Like you need to, if you're going to play Alchemy, you're going to play Intrigue, you got to bring 3 boxes with you, you know?
Right.
Whereas with Thunderstone, it's got room in the box for a couple more expansions. However, it's not as easy to find. These dividers are just basically a Thunderstone card with 2 backs on it. And they're a little wider than the regular card, so you can easily flip between them. But you got to go searching because nothing's labeled. I mean, if there was a way to label those little divider cards, I think that would be a big help. Take setup to a little shorter time because you do spend some time looking through to find the cards that you want. And it also has a rule book. The rule book's very nice. It's full color. It's glossy. The artwork for the game overall is
not the easiest rule book to find everything in.
No, I'm not saying that it is put in the best order that there is. It could have been done better.
Right.
I do like the fact that they provide those detailed examples in the back mm-hmm. because I really had to refer to those examples in order to figure out how to get the gameplay going. So even though the rule book has got its
faults, they've also included those examples in the back, which helped me out quite a bit. So the object of Thunderstone is to have the most victory points when the Thunderstone card appears and ends the game. So it is a victory point.
Thunderstone!
I keep wishing that there was like some reverb in the back.
Thunderstone!
You know?
I can add it. I have the power! I don't know. Playing it, whenever that card comes up, it's like, I feel like just doing
I'm
that.
Telling you.
He-Man!
Raising a sword above your head or the card.
Well, I do that with any game I play. I do that when I'm playing Wits and Wagers.
I have the
power. I have the answer!
You earn victory points by defeating monsters, or leveling up your heroes can earn you some victory points, too. Even some equipment has victory points on it. Possible to win the game without defeating any monsters. I wouldn't recommend trying it. I haven't tried it. I think it would be pretty difficult, but it is within the realm of possibility. There's three sets of randomizer cards for the heroes, for the monsters, and for the village deck. So you're going to basically build up these three separate decks, and this is where the setup comes in a little bit, because first you draw your hero cards, they're going to be present in the game. You have four separate decks of hero cards that you lay out. Then there's 12 villager stacks of cards that you're going to lay out. Four of them are always the same, and the other eight are random. And then, of course, the monsters are also randomized. And once you put that deck together, you take the bottom 10 cards of your monster deck and shuffle that Thunderstone into it. So you're not exactly sure when the Thunderstone is going to come in. You know it's going to be in the last 10 cards. You just don't know where. You lay them out on the table. It's got a nice little diagram there. So let me just mention the three types of cards real quick. The hero stacks each consists of 12 cards. As you move farther down in the stack, the heroes get stronger. You know, the first six cards are like level one hero. The next four are level two, and the last two are level three. And during the game, you can spend these experience points you get from killing various monsters to level up your heroes. However, if, you know, the particular hero's already been leveled up so that there's no cards left, well, then you can't level it up. You're stuck. So, you know, you start with an Amazon Archer. Well, you spend your experience points and decide to level up to an Amazon Huntress. And then later on, you go to level up to an Amazon Queen. So your characters do get better throughout the game, which is kind of neat. Now, the monster deck itself, that gets laid out with three monsters next to it in a line. You know, and they're rated like rank one, rank two, rank three. Okay, the farther you are away from the monster deck, the easier it is to kill the monster. This is one of the biggest things. Your whole goal from here, aside from getting victory points, is building a hand strong enough to defeat these monsters that are currently on the board. And as right. You get closer to the monster deck, they get a little stronger because they use the concept of light. There's a light penalty.
Yes. And that's something that's very important that we do discuss.
The light penalty?
Yes.
Well, I was just going to talk about that now.
That's a big thing because there are many people out there who do not like the light penalty. They feel that it makes the game too difficult.
Too difficult?
Yes.
Huh. Well, I don't know about that. I didn't get to the point where we were just could not possibly defeat a monster just because he was in a certain spot. We would concentrate on defeating the one that was in the rank one spot so that the other cards would move over. Because as you kill one monster, mm-hmm. the other cards move over and they get a little bit easy. The light penalty goes down as it moves farther, you know, away from the dungeon deck. So one in like a card in spot one is only going to have like a light minus one penalty. Card in spot two,
right,
light
and
minus
then
two,
minus yeah. two,
and
mm-hmm. minus three, exactly. right,
and that basically translates into you multiply it by two, and that's a modifier to your attack. The most difficult part of this game is figuring out your attack modifiers because there are so mm-hmm. many possibilities. Your monster has certain effects that are triggered when you enter the dungeon. He has certain effects during battle. Heroes have certain effects that they trigger when they go into battle. You can have cards and equipment that you can equip to the heroes. Like you can give, you know, your paladin a flaming sword. And this all adds up to this attack number, which basically you compare against the monster's health, and you either kill him or you don't. If you don't kill him, he goes back into the bottom of the monster deck. If you do kill him, you get to take him as a trophy. Or, well, you get to take him.
And you get the victory
points. You get the victory points. You get experience points if they're on his card. There's a whole bunch of symbols on all the cards. It takes you a little while to figure out. But once you get it down, I mean, it took me a game, really, to have all the symbols down. And once you've figured out all the things that you got to calculate every time, you know, the calculation gets much easier the more you go through it. So you're sitting there. Like,
right, because there are a lot of modifiers that you have to take into account.
That's the biggest thing, is all the modifiers that you have to take into account, with the light one being the biggest one. You can get light. You can bring light in with you with like a torch and stuff, and then that penalty goes away. Yeah, so it all depends on what you happen to draw with your hand. It's a deck building game. So you shuffle your cards, right. You draw six cards, you look at what's in your hand, and you try to figure out what you can do with it. Can you defeat any of the monsters? No, I can't defeat the monster. So what do? That's when you go to the village. You can go to the village, and there's where you can buy cards based on what money you have available. And yes, all the cards have little money symbols on them, so you know what they're worth. Certain cards add, you know, this part is almost just like in Dominion. You go into the village, you can buy a hero, you can buy a card, a piece of equipment, and that's where you can also level up your heroes. So that's where you're going to spend most of your time, because you're either got a hand that'll let you defeat a monster that's up there, or you don't.
You have to build the hand up.
Yeah. You got to hope for the right combination of cards to come up so that you can just slam on one of those monsters.
Go to town.
The last thing you can do is rest, which allows you to destroy a card if you want to. They have these disease cards, which some monsters, when you kill them, can give you a disease. And they,
like, yes, herpes?
Herpes monstritis. 12. You go through the deck, killing all these monsters, getting the victory points, building your deck up. Once the Thunderstone comes out, you can either kill the monster next to it, and then you end up getting the Thunderstone card in your hand, or the Thunderstone moves off into rank one, and at that point, the game is over.
Over.
You go through your deck, you add up all your victory points, and whoever has the most victory points wins. I have to say, I had a good time playing this game. It did take us a while to figure out from the first time playing it. And I had read through the rules, but, you know, when you finally get into action and playing the game, and you're like, oh, well, wait, let me look this up. Wait, let me look this up. The examples helped out a lot. It took us maybe an hour and a half the first time we played. So I think easily it would have went down to an hour after, on the second game. It's not as simplistic as Dominion, but I think that actually helps add to the game. I mean, I do get the feeling of doing a dungeon crawl type game by playing by playing Thunderstone. Whereas Dominion, you know, it's different. It's much more simplistic, and that's why they keep coming out with expansions that, you know, add certain complexities to the game. And some of them work, like Prosperity, and some of them don't, like in Alchemy. But here you got a great little game. This game retails for $39.99. It comes with 530 cards, and it's everything that you need to keep you going for a lot of replayability.
Yeah, everything is there, as far as you don't necessarily have to get any of the expansions if you don't want to. But that's the case with Dominion as well. My opinion, I like Thunderstone. I really do. You like Dominion a lot more than I do. I'm not saying I don't like Dominion, but I don't see what the big rage was about it. I mean, I think it's a good game, but it wasn't something like, oh my gosh, I've got to save up this $50 so I can go get Dominion. What I kind of find interesting is you'll see on different forums and that people will ask, they'll say, hey, you know, which game should I get? Should I get Dominion or should I get Thunderstone? Should I get Summoner's Wars? We haven't played Summoner's Wars, so can't give you, you know, an opinion on that. And, you know, I find it really strange that a lot of people are like, well, Thunderstone, that's just like Dominion. I don't think so. I think it's a completely different game.
Like,
sure.
It has one of the same mechanics.
No, it's nothing
really,
like it.
That's it.
Yes. It's just the deck building. That's the only thing that they have in common. Now, there have been two expansions for Thunderstone. With the second expansion, Wrath of the Elements, I do understand that does make some changes to the gameplay that people were kind of complaining about. Like I said, like that light penalty thing. There are a lot of people who really don't don't like that light penalty, and they feel that, you know, it just makes the game more difficult. It makes the game run longer.
I see. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it.
I didn't.
It was just another calculation.
But I'm just saying.
Add in there, you know?
Another negative that you have to overcome somehow. That's all. But yeah, I like Thunderstone. Yeah, I like it a lot. Okay, I'll be very honest here. I like it better than Dominion. There you go. I said it.
Well, I'm not going to say that.
Go ahead. You were about to say, what are you, an idiot?
I was going
to
say, you're mad.
You're mad. I am. Well, that's obvious. But one of the things about Dominion, and like I said, I like Dominion. Thematically, there's nothing to it.
Right.
You feel like you're playing a card game is what you're playing.
Yeah, but you know, and it's got that feeling of trying to put together those killer combos. You remember from the Magic days?
Oh, I know.
Putting together those killer combos. And I still kind of enjoy that that feeling that you're getting. I'm like, oh, yeah. Bam, bam, bam. Thank you.
No, I'm with you on that. I understand.
Thunderstone is different. You know, it doesn't have really a killer combo type deal where you're playing for that. But it is a completely different game.
No, not at all. Like I said before, it's not like Dominion in any respect, except for the fact that you are building a hand of cards. It's a deck building game. I think Thunderstone's definitely worth a purchase. If somebody hasn't picked it up yet, they certainly should, because it's a good time. Mm-hmm. It really is.
I am good with that.
This is Louie from Arizona. I'm going to have to go with Dominion Prosperity as my game of the year for 2010. Nothing really groundbreaking. The game just sort of evolved. I think we all knew that there was going to be bigger victory point cards, bigger money cards, but they really did actually add a lot. They changed the strategies a little bit on every set, which was interesting. It did make the game a lot more fun in the games that I've played with with a lot of prosperity cards. That's it. I guess it would be Dominion Prosperity Game of the Year 2010 for me, or expansion, or whatever.
Rally around the flag! Rally around the flag, boys! It's time once again for the War Room! Proudly sponsored by Victory Point Games, where the game plays the thing. Among the great game designers of all time, you'll find the name of Frank Chadwick of Game Designers Workshop, or GDW fame, listed high among the pantheon. Chadwick was the mastermind behind such legendary games as Space 1889, Twilight 2000, as well as Volley and Bayonet. I played the hell out of all three of those, as well as many others. Returning to his board wargaming roots, Frank has joined forces with Victory Point Games to bring back the fun of war games of yesteryear, using his renowned Battle for Moscow game engine to launch a new series on the same scale, Frank Chadwick's Campaigns in Russia. The Arduous Beginning is the first new historical board game in some 15 years from Frank Chadwick, and tells the narrative of the early months of the Axis Army Group Center's attempt to grind Mother Russia under its heel in a campaign the world would soon know as Operation Barbarossa. The initial shock of the attack sent the Soviets reeling, and Minsk quickly fell to the invaders. However, the Axis timetable demanded complete success during the initial months of the invasion, for only with the Red Army destroyed and Belorussia occupied could the Soviet Union, fresh from Stalin's purges, collapse. But anything less than total victory would mean a long and protracted war. The stakes could not be higher as the German panzers and infantry engaged Soviet armies and mechanized corps along Russia's western frontier, all in the arduous beginning. When the Germans launched Operation Barbarossa on June 22, 1941, they faced both their greatest expanse of territory to capture and the greatest concentration of Soviet armor south of the Pripyat Marsh in Ukraine. Army Group South launched its multinational forces, including Romanians, Hungarians, and Italians, with their principal target defined, Objective Kiev. The second game in Frank Chadwick's Campaigns in Russia, Objective Kiev features countless opportunities and variations, presenting an endlessly fascinating series of puzzles, and is a game that you're going to want to play again and again. This quiet northern flank of Operation Barbarossa was anything but quiet. Army Group North, commanded by Field Marshal von Lieb, was given an important strategic goal, target Leningrad.
to capture this second capital of Russia and the birthplace of Soviet communism would deal a severe psychological blow to the enemy, protect the northern flank of Army Group Center, and bring an overland route into Finland, Germany's Axis ally in the north. Hitler would endlessly obsess on the capture of Leningrad. The third game in the series, Target Leningrad, is filled with rich historical narrative in every move, as Leningrad becomes the focus of this great campaign. Now these three highly accessible, fast-playing, and fun war games by the master himself, Frank Chadwick, are bundled together at victorypointgames.com for one low sale price. Get moving. This offer may expire at any time, so don't wait. This deal is moving like a rolling tank battle.
On this edition of The War Room, I want to take a look at Julius Caesar, which is from Columbia Games. Designed by Grant Dalglish and Justin Thompson, it just came out in 2010, and it's the latest block game by Columbia Games. From my understanding, it's similar to Richard III, The War of the Roses, as well as Hammer of the Scots. I know you and I are always talking about Hammer the Scots, we'd really like to check it out, but I haven't played either one. It's been a while since I played a Columbia game, and I don't know why. I remember my first experience with Columbia Games was at Gen Con years and years ago. Bobby Lee had just come out, the Civil War game, and I played a demo game of that. I really enjoyed it, and I won, which was pretty funny, seeing I'd never played it before. Well, I just took Washington, baby. That's, you know, if you're the South, you're playing a Civil War game, you got to start looking at trying to get Washington. That's how you win.
Gragnard advice from Jeff McAleer.
There you go. Thank you. So what it is with the blocks, it's Fog of War. So one side has a sticker that shows what that unit is, what that legion is, as well as its strength, and the other side's blank. So facing your opponent is the blank side. They don't know exactly what's going on, what units are in at each location. It's the story of the Roman Civil War, which was from 49 to 45 BC. So your two opposing forces is you have Julius Caesar and you also have Pompey. So, and Pompey begins the game in control of Rome.
This is kind of replaying the events depicted in season one of Rome.
I believe that would be correct. Unfortunately, I only saw like the first few episodes of I didn't see the whole thing. On a side note, have you seen Boardwalk Empire? Great show. Okay. Got to check it out. Season one should be out on DVD, I think. Awesome. Awesome show. Anyway, let's get back to the review. As far as what you're looking at with the game, it does come with 63 wooden blocks broken up between Pompey and Caesar. And Cleopatra actually makes a appearance here as well. She doesn't really do a whole lot. You know, she's a unit that just kind of goes back and forth. She's pretty fickle.
That's what I heard.
One minute she'll be on Julius Caesar's side, the next minute she could be on Pompey's side, and so forth. Now, the game map itself, it's not a mounted board, but it is pretty high-quality cardboard. So it's not like you have to lay something on top of it that's clear to keep it in place. I was kind of surprised it's not a mounted board. And it also comes with a small deck of cards. Game mechanics, it's card-driven. It's not like a GMT game where the mechanic is using the actions off of the card. The game is played in five rounds. So each round represents a year, and each year has five turns. And between each round, there's a winter turn where players are going to check to see if they've won. The victory conditions are pretty easy. You need 10 victory points to win. Or if time expires, whoever has the most victory points is the winner. If you're tied, of course, it's a draw. The map itself depicts the Mediterranean, so Central and Southern Europe, from Spain to France to right about the Alps, up to Turkey, Israel, Northern Africa. The game itself takes place during the Roman Civil War, where Caesar crossed the Rubicon in 49 BC and marched towards Rome. Well, Pompey opposed him with his legions. The game plays fast. It's very easy to learn. It's not something that is going to take hours. There's only 8 pages of rules. So, and you can easily get it in about 2 hours.
That's not bad, actually.
Oh, no, not at all. I could actually even see you getting it finished sooner than that, but that would just be if the person who's playing Caesar doesn't play very well. It's another one of these easy to learn, hard to master kind of games, and it has a lot of strategic depth. Of course, granted, yes, it is a war game, But it's not a bunch of hexes or anything like that. It's point-to-point movement. You move them from city to city. So it's not as if you're, you know, moving so many hexes each turn. There's two kinds of cards. One is unit cards. The other is divine intervention cards. And there's only a few divine intervention cards. Each round represents a year. So at the beginning of each round, each player is dealt six cards. They can discard one of those. At the beginning of each turn within the round, each player selects a card, puts it face down, and then they flip them over at the same time. Whoever has the highest move value on the card, every movement point counts how many groups of blocks in a location can move to another location. It's not, well, I've got a two, so that means I can move two blocks. It means you can move forces from two locations to another location. And there's different kinds of roads. So some roads will allow more units to move through them. Other roads allow fewer. But as always, don't all roads lead to Rome?
It's true.
With the unit card itself, what you're looking at is you also have levy points, which is like reinforcements. So you can bring new units into play. You can reinforce units that have lost steps because of battle. So their strength has decreased. The other cards are the divine intervention, and they just give you like a special ability that could be used on that turn. It's kind of strange because it's divine intervention, and we already know that historically there weren't any, you know, Roman gods or anything like that. What?
There weren't.
Damn it. I'm sorry.
I suppose you would say there's no Norse gods either.
Well, and there is no Santa Claus. I have to point that out.
We can't say that on our podcast.
What? Do you think we have 8-year-old kids listening to the show?
It's going to be in the car.
Well, then you know what? Then they best just listen to this show while they commute alone to work.
Go ahead.
The sequence of play, you have the card phase. That's where you flip over the cards. If both players have played a divine intervention card, then nothing happens and that round is over. Yep. Whoops. Choose as many locations as you have the movement points that are available on the card. Of course, then you move. After you finish moving, then you can also levy. So now you can add that many steps as the card shows to existing blocks on the map, ships in friendly ports, or you can also recruit a block that's a strength one. A lot of the new units that are introduced have to come up and be recruited in specific cities that are on their blocks. After the command phase, you have the battle phase. Pretty easy. Looking at, you have battle rounds. What you have is all blocks that are in combat are tipped over. You have A blocks, B blocks, C blocks, D blocks, and they'll show on the sticker what they are. So A goes against A, B goes against B, C goes against C, and so forth. Then if you have any reserves that you're holding back from the battle, you can add those. Those are also added to the blocks. The battle system's very easy. It's not very complex. The defender has the advantage, and the attacker has to defeat the defender in a certain amount of time, or they have to retreat. I think that's kind of an interesting concept there, too, because it seems like a lot of games lately, it's sort of like the attacker gets bonuses to shake people out of their doldrums to actually move. Right. Cleopatra, she has a unit herself. In effect, whoever is controlling Alexandria gets to control her. If that unit gets wiped out, it just goes back to Alexandria. So Cleopatra can't die. You also have navies. So you have the navies battling as well. You can use the navies, of course, to transport troops. And then when you have your winter phase, which is at the end of each year, Cleopatra has to go home to Alexandria. Yeah, I guess she's got to be home before the streetlights go on. All the navies that are at sea have to return to friendly ports. If they can't, then it's disbanded. You never completely lose units. They all go back to the side and they can be recruited again by your levy points. Like I said, some people don't like the seven cards that are the divine intervention, especially the Vulcan and Jupiter cards, because they're really powerful. I kind of look at it as the fact that it's just like a special advantage. It's not as if like Apollo comes down and you give somebody super strength or anything like that.
I have the power.
I find the game to be very interesting because there's a historical setup. And then, of course, there's a variant where you can place the units, the starting units, wherever you would like. They have to go in specific cities, but you don't have to have specific units there. Me personally, I don't think the historical setup is all that different than the variant. What's kind of cool about the game is it almost has like a chess element to it.
you're going to find that if you're playing Caesar, you're going to want to try to make some specific opening moves. If you're Pompey, you're going to make other opening moves. Another thing I think is kind of cool, too, is when it begins, and as I mentioned, if you're playing Caesar, you have to go on the attack. The victory points are earned by leaders that you kill and cities that you control. The beginning of the game, Pompey has 7 victory points. Caesar has 1. Remember, you can win the game with 10 victory points. If the Caesar player is just sitting there not doing anything, then the Civil War is going to end probably in about the second year.
Right.
You know, it's going to be over real fast. Each side has their own unique starting challenges that they have to tackle. I think this is a great game. It really is. I definitely have to get my hands on some more Columbia games because, like I said, it's very easy to learn, plays really fast. But there's a lot of depth to it. There's a lot of strategic management and planning that's going to go in a successful winning game of Julius Caesar. Really high up on my list.
Yeah,
I think this
really
was a great game.
To, you know, we're going to have a list of games that we're going to just try at Origins so that I get a chance to try some of these games.
Oh, most definitely.
Excuse me.
And now it's time for Thoughts on Gaming with your hosts, Jeff and Elliot.
Now we're going to talk about some of the best games, biggest games of 2010. Yay! I remember 2000. It's like it was only yesterday, you know?
Oh, yeah, it was.
And here's James Englehart, the gamer on the plains, with some of the most interesting games of 2010.
Hello, everyone. This is James Englehart. It's the last day of 2010, and I'm here thinking about the games that came up during this year. Jeff had asked us all to sort of think about this a little bit, so this is my little bit off the cuff. I've got a list here that I'm going to look at, and we'll just see how it goes. Looking back on 2010, it looks like just a great year. I mean, I was looking back at some of the lists, and you know, a lot of games come out in a given year, but these are ones that I think really stood out to me. Now, it looks like there are a lot more co-op and card drafting games. In particular, the Castle Ravenloft. That's a good one for you. I've got a toddler. I can see Castle Ravenloft as being a really important place for her. In terms of like adventure gaming and co-op gaming, Castle Ravenloft, Defenders of the Realm. In terms of just adventure, Horus Heresy came out, Dungeon Quest, the third edition came out, and it was a good year for, you know, if you wanted to go out and stomp stuff, or if you wanted to stomp stuff with a lot of your friends, good year for that too. Card drafting had another good year. Seven Wonders looks like it's got an awful lot of buzz. I haven't played it, but I'd really like to. The games that I have played and went ahead and picked up, Forbidden Island, that's another, that's a co-op one, of course. A lot of fun to play. I enjoyed picking up that. Mystery Express, I've played several times with friends. A really nice deductive game. It goes really quick. It's just a lot of fun when you do the time mechanic where you try to figure out what time the murder took place. And you're flipping those cards up and people are just freaking out. Fantastic. That's another good one. Let's see, other ones that I picked up Fabula, or my wife picked up Fabula for me for the holiday. My wife is fabulous, but Fabula itself is about the Brothers Grimm. It's kind of a storytelling game. Let's see, other games that came up. Wine seemed to be a big theme this year. So if you're not killing stuff, you're going back and you're making wine. So Vinos came out, Grand Cru, King's Vineyard also there. And if you're into beer, you're not left out. Fürstenfeld came out, and that seemed, I haven't heard much about that at all. The three wine games seemed to get a lot of good buzz, if you will. But the beer one I haven't heard so much about. I'm also interested in this one, Basilica. It seems like a really intriguing two-player game that I'd like to get my hands on, but I haven't seen it around yet, so we'll see what happens. It looks like there were a couple of good games that came out that were sort of follow-up. Well, there's Dungeon Quest, the third edition. That's a good one. Settlers of America, Trails to Rails, the continuing extension of the Settlers of Catan, although this one seemed to have gotten a lot of really good comments about it. So I'm interested to sit down with a copy and see how that works. Key Market came out, got some good buzz. Duel of the Giants, which I haven't really seen much about, but it looks like a nice follow-up to Duel in the Dark. Back to the Future, the card game, which is a nice update or retooling, if you will, of Chrononauts, which I reviewed on the site. And that's a good fun game. So I would suggest picking that one up, almost sight unseen on in my case. Let's see, New York came out, which is a revisit of Alhambra using the basic mechanics of that. Seems like a pretty fun one. Let's see, that seems like there are a couple of new and interesting game mechanics coming out. Well, not interesting. Let's not put too much emphasis on this. But it looks like some of the larger companies have taken a look at these niche games and figured out that there are really good mechanics that can translate well to their games as well. And I was just looking at all of the LEGO games that have been coming out. I haven't had a chance to play any one of them, but they all look like they're trying to do something interesting. I'm also interested in the update, because I have the toddler noted above, to the restructuring of Hi-Ho Cheerio with a cooperative aspect. So I'm looking forward to some of these as well. It looked like there were a couple of funky ones that came out. Iron Die. I have no idea. The die look amazing. I have no idea what that looks like or plays like, but that would be a fun one to keep my eye on, I would think. There's a couple of others I wanted to note in passing really quickly. Frieza-Matanten. I have no idea, but it's just fun to say. It's also cold, and it's the last day of December. It's a high of 12 today, so Frieza-Matanten is exactly how I'm feeling. There's the Sumo Ham Slam, which is, I understand, about sumo wrestling hamsters, and that looks like a lot of fun, but who knows? And then there's the Justin Bieber Backstage Pass game, which I can tell you right now that I would just go out and, you know, they would say, okay, so here are your cards to get to the backstage at the Justin Bieber concert, and I would just fold them and walk away and say, I'm just going to go to the sports bar across the street. I think that's probably a better choice. Let's see. Oh, another fun one, I think, would be Cleopatra's Caboose, the train game set in ancient Egypt. I think it started life just as a joke, so that's kind of amazing. See, other good ones that seem to be coming out, The Hobbit, The Mousquetaire du Roi, I'm still interested in. Blaze came out earlier, and that, I mean, you get, you know, three games in one box. That seems like a good one to get into. Alien Frontiers has gotten a lot of attention, and I'd like to play that. That seems like a nice way to extend the way that Kingsburg or Airships uses dice, so that'll be fun. I did get a chance to play Invasion from Outer Space, the Martian game. I keep looking at this list. Lords of Vegas also came out. Antix is out. De Volgari Eloquentia, I mentioned this for the Christmas one. That's a theme that I'm dying to see. Dakota, I mean, here I am living just south of the Dakotas, so that seems like a fun one. Letters from Whitechapel, we're going to go back to the Jack the Ripper thing again. And why not? I mean, he's evocative, if nothing else. Cyrano, which is a game about, you know, writing poetry. Crows, about crows. It seemed like it was an interesting year, even if some of the mechanics were fairly familiar. Co-op games, card drafting, updates of older copyrights, updates of older properties, but a lot of new and interesting stuff too. So I wish I had $17,000 to spend on games right at the very moment. I don't, so I'll do what I can, play some good ones. I'm looking forward to what 2011 has for us. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Englehart, the gamer on the plains, and may all your tiebreakers break your way.
You know, I'm a little worried about James.
Why is that?
He was talking about games about wine, talking about beer games, talking about the Justin Bieber game that he'd just go to the sports bar across the street. I'm a little worried.
I think if you were forced to play a Justin Bieber game, you would want to go to the bar across the street. I know I would.
No, I would actually probably have to have been shot full of heroin before I would even consider doing something like that.
Just like Justin Bieber.
Is it me? I don't understand. What is the appeal of that kid?
I don't know.
First off, I hate the kid's hair.
But he's cool.
I mean, he looks like he's... Yeah, he's cool. He's cool. He looks like he has a dead beaver on his head.
All right. Now, you can say beaver, but dead beaver on top of it? My God.
Yeah, well, hey, what can I tell you? I see that kid and I think back to 5 years ago, yeah. If some kid in some high school looked like that, everybody would have just beaten the hell out of him. They would have. They'd have been like, what's with that hair? And they would have just taken him outside and just worked him over.
I think we would have probably thrown protractors at him or something, you know?
Yeah, right. We'd have beat them with T-squares for drafting. We'd have just smacked them around with those.
I can't get past the beater beaver. I think that's a great term.
What?
The beater beaver.
There you go. I've heard the term beating the beaver before, but I don't think that's...
Ward.
Weren't you a little hard on the beaver exactly. last night? Right. So what were some of your top games for 2010?
You know, there's a lot of games from 2010 that I'm looking forward to playing. You know, I don't have them yet, so I haven't got a chance to play them. There were a lot of good games that came out in 2010, as far as I'm concerned. I really enjoyed Washington's War. Sid Meier's Civilization, the board game, which I actually now own, but have yet
to... So you'll be reviewing that soon.
Yes. Oh, I have yet to play it. I've had it for...
Have you at least looked at the rules?
No, I did open the box.
I
did.
Yeah, I know. You've had it for about a week. I understand.
And oh, it looks great. And, you know, I've been playing Civ 5 on the PC, so I really got the
challenge. Ah, you finally got it.
Yeah, I got it for Christmas.
Excellent. Very cool. Very cool. Excellent game.
War of the Ring, the Collector's Edition came out. What a thing to aspire to. It was like $500 when it came out, something like that.
What?
War of the Ring Collector's Edition.
Oh, yeah, right.
And it just looks magnificent. There's no way I could ever get this game, but I would like
to
play
it. Wasn't it $300?
Maybe it was $300.
Wasn't it $300?
It'll cost you like $2,000 now over on eBay to pick up a copy of it. Oh, it was just so beautiful. All the individual miniatures.
All painted.
Yeah, all painted. They did rules improvements from the original, which... I think the original War of the Ring, that's an excellent, excellent game. I'm not talking the original that we played back in the olden years.
The SPI
right,
one.
Which was also a great game.
And that goes for big money, too.
Yeah. The one that Fantasy Flight put out, you know, and I played it. I actually played it for the first time this year, and it was one of my two best gaming experiences of the year, was playing War of the Ring against my son, Brian.
What was the second?
Twilight Struggle.
Against
no,
Brian?
No, against you, goof.
Hey, I don't know. You played it with Brian, too?
No.
Oh, yeah. That was your second favorite gaming experience because you won.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, my best gaming experience is where I was crushed like a bug.
I loved it.
So great. Actually, I lost the War of the Rings game, but it was so close. I mean, it came down to a single die roll at the end of the game. And it was so cool.
Who were you playing?
I was Mordor. Sauron. And it was so close. I mean, it really kept the tension going. It kept building and building. And, oh, I had a blast. So, the collector's
edition.
Isn't it
fun sometimes playing the bad guy?
It is. It is. I know you used to always play the bad guy in everything.
Well, not everything, but yeah.
In most things. More because, not because you insisted on it, more because everybody else wanted to play the good guy all the time.
Right, exactly. So what was it going to be? Okay, we're all playing right. The Americans in this game. yeah, nobody's the Axis here.
Mm, yeah, it'll be fun.
Mm. It's not like I went goose stepping around and, you know, had a huge, like, Nazi library or something.
Not a huge one, anyway.
I knew somebody who did have, like, all these Nazi books and stuff, and it was kind of like, oh, okay. Well, hey, nice meeting you. See ya. I mean, there's one thing to have history books and, you know, I mean, World War II is another period that I've read quite a lot about and that. I mean, when you're sitting there and it's like, how come everything is SS related? You're like, don't you have any, like, histories from, you know, the Allied point of view?
Right.
Or what else would you put on your list?
Well, Nuns on the Run. That's a fun game.
I haven't played that.
No, I've got it, and we should give it a try. I got mixed reviews.
Next time I'm in Chicago?
Well, I guess I'm not going to cart it down to Origin. Well, they'll have it there.
Yeah, I'm sure they would in an open gaming area or something, sure.
You know, it's like a hidden movement game. You're trying to go retrieve something and get back to your room before the nun finds you. One of the...
Mother Superior,
the nuns.
Yeah.
Really a lot tougher than it sounds. As a matter of fact, the Mother Superior wins more often than not. That was a fun game. Came out last year. Dominant Species. That is an excellent game. Although, you know, I still think out of all the GMT games that have come out, I'm still enjoying Twilight Struggle the most.
Mm-hmm.
But... I thought Dominant Species was very, very well done. And Alien Frontiers. Alien Frontiers came out in 2010. And I'm going to announce that as my game of the year. up to this point.
That you've played, of course.
Yes. Alien Frontiers was an excellent game. It had a lot of new innovation. The way it got published, it was so well done. Yeah, we've talked a lot about Alien Frontiers on the podcast and on the website. To this point, that's my game of the year. I did have fun playing Betrayal at House on the Hill, but for half the game, I was kind of betrayed by Betrayal at House on the Hill.
I was going to say, would you even consider Betrayal at House on the Hill in your top games of 2010?
You know, half the game is. Half the game is goofy. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the parts where, you know, the story comes in and everything gets going and you find out who the betrayer is and you've got this storyline that you're following. Everything leading up to it is like, whatever. So it's like half a game to me.
So it's on your list of game of the year for half of 2010?
Right. But there's a lot of other games out there that I really want to be able to try, like Seven Wonders, 51st State. There's a lot of them out there that I haven't got a chance to play yet. Fresco, London.
Now, London is coming from Mayfair Games this month.
Van Helsing and
Van Helsing.
So those are my best games of 2010. More to come in the future. Jeff, how about you?
Me, my game of the year, most definitely, has to be Solitaire Tic-Tac-Toe.
I knew it. No doubt about it, man. The endless strategy possibilities in that game are just unbelievable.
Well, you want to talk about easy to learn, hard to master? You can't even win.
I'm telling you, X or O, I don't know.
Actually, 2010, I thought, was an excellent year from what I've been able to play. And just like yourself, there are loads of games out there I would love to get my hands on.
Yeah.
And we're not even just talking about the European stuff that hasn't made its way to our shores yet, but even games that were released here from American companies. There's so much out there. And we just scratched the surface.
Yeah, it's true.
We're three guys. I mean, you know, how much can we possibly do?
Three guys plumbing.
As far as some of the games that really jumped to mind, Out of the Box Publishing, they had some great stuff come out. Ninja versus Ninja, Pirates versus Pirates. Those are fun games, you know, mm-hmm. for the whole family. They had Word on the Street Junior came out. I think Word on the Street is great. I think it's a great game. Kind of a party game more for the family. That definitely deserves a spot. We also had Wits and Wagers Family come out. We had Roadkill Rally. Forbidden Island, Defenders of the Realm, how can we forget that?
Oh, yeah.
Baltimore and Ohio, which I just talked about earlier in the show. There were a lot of great games that we had an opportunity to play that just came out this past year. And honestly, I'm a little surprised, and I'm just going to use this as a side note, that Scott Nicholson is kind of hanging up his Board Games with Scott, because I think this past year was a really good year for games. Maybe they just aren't the kind of games he enjoys playing. I don't know. But I thought 2010 was a pretty darn good year. Oh, another company, how can I even forget? Victory Point Games came out with a bunch of great stuff this year. Mm-hmm. And they come out with a new game about every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks?
Every 2 weeks, yeah. That's pretty much their schedule. So they had a lot of good stuff out there, too. Yeah. Astro Titanus, I want to check that one out, most definitely. They've got some other stuff in the pipeline. And there's one company, I think, and you've mentioned a few of the games already, myself personally, think that had an exceptional year. I didn't run across anything from this company that I thought was poorly done. For my money, I think the company that impressed me the most with the high level of quality, everything I got my hands on, GMT.
Yeah, those are some good games.
Easily. Most definitely. Dominant Species, great game. That was a lot different than what people were thinking it was going to be. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You already mentioned Washington's War. My game of 2010 up to this point that we've been able to play, and I'll tell you right up front, it's going to take something really dynamic to knock it off the top spot, Labyrinth, the War on Terror. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a game changer in some ways. Yes, it's card driven, but it just does so many different things. It's a great experience. The solo game, the solitaire game, I've played a little bit. That's kind of a bonus. I don't think it's great, the solitaire version of it, but you know what? I don't think the game was originally designed to be solitaire. It's just a fantastic game. And you can play it from the U.S. side. You can play it from the Islamic jihadist side. To be honest, I know I've mentioned it in the review previously. I'm sure a lot of people are not going to be too keen to take on that side. But as we were talking earlier, sometimes you got to play the bad guy. Numero uno. That is my top game.
Oh, very good. Of course, you haven't played Resident Evil, the card game yet.
No, I have not. I have to admit, I have not had an opportunity to play that, nor would I really be looking forward to that opportunity either.
More to come. Stay tuned.
So more to come. Oh, we'll have plenty more games that have come out just this past year that we'll be covering because we're finally going to get our hands on them, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, we're working Joes. What can we tell you? 2010, great year. 2011, I think, is going to be another great year. And I think it's going to be a big year for the gaming gang as a whole.
I agree. I think we're going in the right direction.
And if not, I'm sure somebody will pull us over and tell us what the right direction would
be. And beat us. Beat us with sticks. Oh, hey, and before we forget, we want to announce the winner of our latest contest.
That's right. And we do want to thank everyone who called in to share with us what they thought was the top game or expansion of 2010. The winner of a brand spanking new copy of Victory Point Games Astro Titanus is Louis. Louis, his username is Montesalou at Board Game Geek. We'll definitely be getting in contact with Louis so that we can make sure that we get that game right out to him.
Excellent. Excellent.
Don't have a contest this time around. We promise we will on the next episode.
Sounds good to me.
I would hope so. It's a free game. What can you say? I think we're out of time. Elliot, care to take us out?
You've been listening to the Gaming Gang Podcast with Jeff McAleer and Elliot Miller. If you'd like to know more about the topics or games we discussed in this episode, please visit our website at www.thegaminggang.com. If you would like to have your opinion heard or have a gaming issue you'd like us to discuss on a future podcast, you can visit the Gaming Gang Guild on BoardGameGeek or call us at 480-779-7365 and leave a message. Our show notes are provided by James Englehart and can be found on our website. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please rate us on iTunes. Some of the games discussed on our show were provided to the Gaming Gang in the form of review copies. On behalf of everyone here at the Gaming Gang, thanks for listening.